Good morning, everyone. Great to see you.
Recording in progress.
Got it. Great to see you. Welcome, welcome. So this week, we are in the Torah of Vayikra, at the start of the book of Exodus. And it's filled with detailed laws of priestly sacrifices. And if we're in the Parsha of Vayikra, that means that we have less than 2 weeks to enter the time and space of Pesach. There we will place on the Seder table a plate with a symbol of the ancient sacrifices of the Paschal lamb, which my vegetarian friend Eileen substitutes with a roasted burnt sweet potato that she calls the Paschal yam. So that works. Back in the day, the Israelite priests sacrificed an animal on this 15th day of the month of Nisan at the full moon. And the sacrifice was for the observance of Passover, with its telling of the story of leaving Egypt. In Hebrew, Egypt is Mitzrayim, in Arabic, Misr. Both translate into English as the narrow places. And I saw exactly why it was called a narrow place when I took a long, slow boat ride up the Nile from Cairo, 300 miles south to the Valley of the Kings, which is a sweltering burial grounds of the pharaohs. And on the boat, I witnessed the origins of this word narrow place, for the deck of the ship was a little bit higher than the land on either side that was flat. And when I turned to one side of the Nile, there was this lush green strip of cultivation that people built. They built these little warren of canals that would extend the water into their little patches. And when I looked on the other side of the Nile, it was the same. So it was physically, literally, a narrow place on which the civilization grew. So Passover invites us to find ways of leaving the narrow places in our lives. In Moses' interpretation, leaving the narrow places means to serve something larger than your own desires, aversions, and delusions. To serve something that's neither the internal nor the external Pharaoh. Instead, to serve Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh in the wilderness. This wilderness is a place of not knowing. And we know that some of our Buddhist cousins teach not knowing is most intimate. Not knowing where we drop our endless efforts to name and describe and to strive to do this life. Instead, we learn to attune our compass to the wordless breath of life, the source of all being. A wilderness, by nature, is something beyond our control, a place that defies knowing, a place that's unfamiliar and potentially life-threatening. So one of the gifts of our meditation practice is to notice over and over, with a modicum of equanimity, when we are captive to narrow places, be they personal, political, social, spiritual, or global. And in our practice, one definition of a narrow place is being caught in self-absorption, or anything that solidifies the sense of a separate self. Which is why it's good news that the Hebrew calendar is filled with opportunities to experience an endless variety of practices and teachings that aim to awaken us. The weekly Shabbat observance, for example, is described as Shemor v'Zachor, guard and remember. Take the time to cease human doing and to rest in human being. It's a practice that allows us to feel our own suffering without hurting others and be a better support for others who do suffer. Leaving the narrow place can mean so many different things, but Passover has one very specific directive for how this can happen. We are commanded to tell our children the story of the narrow places, Mitzrayim, Egypt, and the possibility of liberation from the narrows. Liberation and the cessation of suffering as a society can't be accomplished in one individual lifetime. As the Talmud, grateful that the Talmud reminds us, you cannot complete the work of liberation in your little bounded lifetime, but neither are you free to desist from making a wholehearted effort to transform this life and world, to release it from what binds us. There are many ways to make wholehearted efforts to create a more just and sane and conscious life and world. And all of them include some kind of awakening. All include working for real good, an awakening to the whims of ego that can buffet us with desires, aversions, and delusions. I marvel at the wisdom of this mandate to tell our children to notice what is broken in the world and to learn to be wounded healers instead of wounded herders. Now my three children are middle-aged, and each of them has chosen a different path that sees and acknowledges suffering and works to alleviate it. And I see them passing on the mandate to do this to their children, my grandkids. My midbar, my unknowable, intimidating new space that I'm entering now in my 70s, is the experience of some struggle with cognitive impairment. My mom had Alzheimer's for 15 years, and so I'm going now through a series of cognitive neurological tests. This afternoon, I'll have an MRI of my brain. And like the midbar, this is unfamiliar territory that feels life-threatening. So my beloved co-leaders here in Nishmat Chaim and you, my community of meditators, give me the possibility of thinking that whatever happens, there will still be love. In the last few weeks, I got to experience another extraordinary example of spaciousness of the midbar that was both life-threatening and uplifting. This was in the brutality and vast beauty of Antarctica. I witnessed the triumph of life in a totally inhumane environment. Majestic, transcendent, complex, hundreds and hundreds of penguins, whales twice as long as the width of our TBZ sanctuary, and billions upon billions of minuscule krill, invisible to us, that are the food source for all these gorgeous species upon which rests the survival of all species and the interconnection of life. It's almost like krill was God in that region, and that creates our world anew, physically, in each moment. Whales go thousands of miles to eat tons of this tiny creature upon which the world's ecosystem depends. So we trekked formidable ice caps and snow-capped rugged mountains in freezing temperatures, brutal winds, sometimes following the trails that tunnel through the ice that penguins have dug with their little tiny feet over centuries. I delighted in discovering that when our ship went through particularly rocky waters, if I imitated the penguin's walk, which I'd be delighted to show you one day in person, then I could walk the ship's narrow corridors no problem when others stumbled. So after surviving all that potential danger, a few days ago, after returning home to my own cozy bed, I rose in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom and slipped on an area rug. And as I put my foot down, it moved and I fell and broke two ribs. So you don't have to go on adventure to, ouch. So it's easy for me to identify now with the Israelites who continually catastrophize the outcome of their situation. I too get to watch my mind catastrophizing things. Not only loss of memory, but anything really that's not going my way, or anything that compromises my values or feels life-threatening, like the attack on our democracy. And our practice helps me confront ill-serving habits of mind that don't have any good outcomes. So as you know, the Israelites were never like, whoopee, we're free, but rather, gulp, can't we go back to Egypt into our familiar little lives as slaves, rather than die in this frightening spaciousness? And their fear will be expressed in complaining, whining, catastrophizing, blaming God, Moses, and each other for their difficulties. We know too well our narrow vision that separates us from our source of being, from our true nature, and from each other. My loneliness expresses itself in repetitive, constricting, familiar ways. When I see it, feel it, and bring some kindness to it, it loosens its grip a bit. So over and over, the Passover Haggadah says, "Let my people go." This is the great directive for our meditation practice in this Torah time of Pesach. Yes, it's not only possible, but necessary to cultivate a practice of moving from Mitzrayim, the narrow places, to Hamidbar, the desert wilderness. In our meditation, we practice moving from our conditioned narrow vision of reality to an open curiosity to what is arising into awareness right now, right now. Fears like this, sorrow like this, joy like this. And how is it now, right now, in the body? The breath, the heart, the spirit. Can we bear witness to our fears, our disconnect, and to the depth of connection, beauty, and majesty? How is boredom, or despair, or pleasure, or love? And who are we with no signposts following Moshe, who is plugged into invisible source, whose voice arises out of the midbar, the wilderness, the not knowing? So the word midbar in Hebrew has the same letters as speak. And if you vowel midbar, desert, like this, midaber, that means speak. And out of the vast silence of the desert midbar, what speaks, midaber, to you? Can we bear the apparent stillness and silence and open to what speaks to us through and beyond our fears, so that there is a release into a wider, unfolding reality that accompanies us at all times? So, okay, we agree to sit still, and we let go trying to get somewhere. We let go becoming an imaginary someone. Like the Israelites on their journey, we too fail over and over to get the message of our intimate connection with the unnameable force of creation. Can we acknowledge with gratitude and curiosity the Ruach, the Spirit, that breathes us and all our fellow creatures into being, whether gargantuan or minuscule? Can we enter into presence together? Can we watch the force of compassion reach for us again and again in forgiveness as we return once more into interconnection? And how else can we learn our interconnection to everything that's keeping us alive? Can we let the breath, the body, the emotions, and the mental activity arise into awareness to be greeted with kindness? In that moment, there's a simple shift. The unknowable scoops us up into a great embrace. Dread shifts to curiosity. Fear gets tempered by love. Striving rests. And a deep wonder opens in us to this moment of inscrutable life on a wild planet. In the Torah, the ritual killing of an animal is called a korban. The root of the word korban, K-R-V, is karov, meaning to get close, to draw near. What are our offerings, our sacrifices, that bring us close to this divine unfolding? How do we sacrifice something that brings us into intimacy with that which breathes us into being? What does it mean today to offer a ritual sacrifice? And in what ways do you experience in this practice and in this life what brings us close to the divine unfolding? So let's sit for a moment. Let whatever may be your desire to do or to think or to solve be our offering. Each thing that's noticed and let go can be our korban. So may sitting still and returning to watch a single breath arise, abide, and disappear be our korban. May that which connects us to what creates us anew in this moment be our korban. May watching the space of deep stillness be our korban, our sacrifice, our getting close. So breathing in, slow. Breathing out, slow. Breathing in, soft. Breathing out, soft. Breathing in, deep. Breathing out, deep. Breathing in, still. Breathing out, still.